It's the dictionary.
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 Hello, word nerds. Welcome to the dictionary. Welcome to the dictionary. Today I'm recording this on March 15th. Oh, that's the Ides of March. 8:06 a.m. A little bit late start. Later than normal. Okay. Hey, let's talk about the words. The first word is euphony. E-U-P-H-O-N-Y. Euphony. Euphony. Me funny, you funny. This is a noun from 1606. Number one, pleasing or sweet sound, especially the acoustic effect produced by words so formed or combined as to please the ear. What words might those be? Do we have to find an example of euphony? Most of the words mists, mellow, close, sun, bless, vines, and eaves all have a soothing quality to them and don't sound harsh or jarring, making them euphonious words. Mists, mellow, vines, eaves. Okay. Pleasing or sweet sound. Number two, a harmonious succession of words having a pleasing sound. That's it, just the words going together to make the nice sounds. I'm never good with coming up with the words off the top of my head. I don't know. Euphonic is an adjective and euphonically is an adverb. Those words were said so euphonically because they were so pleasing and harmonious. Pleasing and harmonious. This word is from the Greek euphonos, which means sweet-voiced or musical. From the EU prefix plus phony, which means voice, that's phony, P-H-O-N-E, not you're a phony and so fake. There's more at the word ban, B-A-N. Again, I don't know where those extra words come from. Euphony, things that sound real nice. Sometimes I think my voice sounds real nice, and sometimes it doesn't. Oh, my sound effect today is going to be... something like that. The next word is euphorbia. Euphorbia, noun from the 14th century. Any of a large genus, euphorbia, of herbs, shrubs, and trees of the spurge family that have a milky juice and flowers lacking a calyx and included in an involucre which surrounds a group of several staminate flowers and a central pistillate flower with three lobed pistils. P-I-S-T-I-L-S. Broadly, the synonym is spurge. So I don't remember. I kind of feel like maybe was there a spurge word recently? Can't remember that. These spurges have a very fun sort of yellow flowery burst at the top of these. And boy, there were so many flower words in that definition. I don't know what anything said. They have a milky juice. Would that be euphony, milky juice? Are those words that sound sweet and harmonious to you? The milky juice. This word, euphorbia, is from the Latin euphorbis, which is, a first century AD Greek physician. I was not expecting that. So, somehow, this Greek physician, first century AD, that was a long time ago, they learned about this these herbs, shrubs, trees in the spurge family. And where does the name spurge come from? I don't know. Okay, let's move on. Whoa! The next word is euphoria. noun from circa 1751. A feeling of well-being or elation. Euphoric or euphoric is an adjective, and euphorically is an adverb. This is from the Greek euphoros, which means healthy, from the EU prefix plus pherine, which means to bear, B-E-A-R, like you have it, maybe. So then you have, if you have euphoria, euphoros, you have health, you are healthy, you are happy, you are elated. Obviously, you're elated if you're healthy. Everybody who's ever been healthy has been elated about their healthiness. Feeling of well-being or elation. This is where we all want to be. We want to be in a state of euphoria. I feel like there are people, I don't know if you could say that they have some sort of mental illness. I don't know, but I feel like there are just certain people who just never seem to be happy. And maybe that's just, you never get to see them alone. Maybe they're happy when they're alone. But for some reason, there are some people out there who just feel like it's just negativity all the time. And I think that's a choice. I think it's hard, sometimes hard, if you're so stuck in that negativity. But yeah, I don't imagine people like that ever being in a state of euphoria. Feel like they're just, nothing's ever good enough. It's all good. You can be in a state of euphoria if you want to be. But, you know, some people have just difficult situations and it's hard to get there. You shall get there if you want to get there. Woo! The next word is euphoriant. Euphoriant. Noun from 1947. This is a drug that tends to induce euphoria. And euphoriant is also an adjective. I've never heard of a drug described as a euphoriant, but it makes sense. This is a thing. If people are having a hard time finding that euphoria naturally, they may turn to drugs to find that. And that's a whole big topic of drugs and stuff. And what do you call a drug? Is there so many things? And I can't get into that conversation right now. But yes, it's going to just make you maybe feel euphoria. And that's the problem with some of these drugs, is that you feel it, and then you don't get it in your regular life when you're not on drugs. And so then you want it more, and then you just keep on turning to the drugs. And, you know, I think that they are okay in moderation, but you need to, I think you should try and find maybe some of those feelings without drugs. Maybe if you can remember what it feels like, maybe you can just bring that feeling on. Maybe meditation, maybe exercise. There's a lot of things that you can do to get into that state of euphoria without this sort of chemical adjustment. We got to go on. We got to move on from that. Woo-wah! Next is euphotic. Euphotic. Adjective from 1909, of relating to or constituting the upper layers of a body of water into which sufficient light penetrates to permit growth of green plants. I remember we had something else that was like this that was kind of the opposite. Was it dysphotic, dis something, D-Y-S? And that was like so far away from the sun that those green plants can't do the photosynthesis, so they can't grow. But this one, you're in the upper layers of the body of water, near the surface of the body of water, so the sun can penetrate through. If you're looking at the video, this is the sun penetrating through the water, and then the plants get to grow. Upper layers of a body of water into which sufficient light penetrates to permit growth. Yep, that's it. That's all there is to do. That's everything for euphotic. Woohoo! Next is euphrosyne, or euphrosyne, and that's it. Capital E-U-P-H-R-O-S-Y-N-E. Euphrosyne. Noun from 1579. This is one of the three graces. I didn't know there were three graces. Are they all named Grace? No, clearly they're not, because one of them is called Euphrosyne. I wish I could copy and paste from this book. That's the problem when you have a actual physical literal thing. Let's see. E-U-P-H, where did it go? P-H-R-O, S-Y-N-E, Euphrosyne. In Greek mythology, the Charites, Charites, singular Charis or Graces, were three or more goddesses of charm, beauty, nature, human creativity, goodwill, and fertility. That's more than three things. Hesiod names three, Aglaia, Euphrosyne, and Thalia. Oh, there's a place in Chicago called Thalia Hall. And the name, blah, 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 blah. Okay, we can't go any further than that, but, their parents are Zeus, Aphrodite, and Eurydice. And I don't know how they have three parents, but they have three parents. Specifically, let's put this link in the show notes. Euphrosyne is a goddess of good, cheer, joy, and mirth. M-I-R-T-H. You gotta get that mirth. Maybe euphoria is part of that. Euphrosyne. Her name is the female version of Euphrosynos, which means merriment. Okay, Euphrosyne, the three graces, not named Grace. Whoa, wah! Next is I thought it was euphemism. No, it's euphuism. Euphuism. Or just euphuism. Okay. Euphuism. Euphuism. Noun from 1592. Number one, an elegant Elizabethan literary style marked by excessive use of balance, antithesis, and alliteration, and by frequent use of similes drawn from mythology and nature. That really narrows it down, doesn't it? Euphuism. Euphuism. It's from Elizabethan times. There's a lot of... I don't know enough about literature or writing. There's a lot of balance, antithesis, and alliteration. I know alliteration. That's when you use a lot of the same sounds in a lot of words. Frequent use of similes. A lot of similes drawn from mythology and nature. So that thing was like that other thing in mythology. Okay, number two. Artificial elegance of language. I don't know how you use that in a sentence. How do you use that? Artificial elegance of language. How would that be artificial, though? If you have elegance of language, that's just elegance of language. I have the opposite of elegance of language. But it's fake artificial. It's fake elegance of language. Okay. Euphuist. Euphuist is a noun. I guess that's the one who was writing the euphuism. Euphuistic is an adjective. And euphuistically, that's an adverb. This is a silly word. Just sounds silly. This is from Euphues. I don't know how to pronounce that. Euphues, which was a character in prose romances by John... Is that Lyly? L-Y-L-Y. Lyly. John Lyly. Maybe that was in the 1500s. Euphues. Where did this name come from? I don't know. That's a fun word. Woo-woo-woo-woo! The next word is euploid. Adjective from 1926. Having a chromosome number that is an exact multiple of the monoploid number. And it says compare to aneuploid with an A-N at the beginning, which I guess would be maybe the opposite. Chromosome number that is the exact multiple, and maybe aneuploid would be not the multiple. It's not the right number. Or maybe it's the exact multiple of a different number. I don't know what monoploid is. Euploid is also a noun, and euploidy is also a noun. Whoa! Next is eupnea. Yeah, eupnea. E-U-P-N-E-A. Or you can put an O after the N. Eupnea. Noun from circa 1706. This is just normal respiration. That's not normal respiration. That's better. Eupneic, that is an adjective. Eupnea. So you want the eupnea. I don't know, would the opposite be a dyspnea? Maybe I probably read that and I can't remember it. This word is from the Greek eupnea, from eupnous, which means breathing freely, which is from the EU prefix plus pnein, P-N-E-I-N, which means to breathe. And there's more at the word sneeze. Sneeze. How did sneeze get in there? What's the etymology of sneeze? That's going to be interesting. I love a good sneeze. I don't know if I have any in the chamber right now, but maybe soon. Okay, sneezing and breathing. We're sneezing and we're breathing, yeah. Okay, that's eupnea. Whoa! The next word is E-U-R with a capital E, abbreviation for Europe and European. European, I'm a peeing, everybody's a peeing. Oh, sound effect. Ugh, it came up fast. Woo-hoo-hoo! Okay, we have the ur prefix, E-U-R, E-U-R-O, both with a capital E. This means we have a lot of things and a lot of examples. So we have European and, as in the example, you're American. Are you American? I'm American. No, this would be European and American. You're American. I don't know how that gets used in context. Maybe there's a treaty with Europe and America. So that treaty would be a American treaty. Also just European, as in Eurocentric. Also Western European, as in Eurocommunism. And also the last one is of the European. Of the European, and that, oh, sorry, of the European Union. That makes more sense, I guess. As in Eurocrat. So that might be somebody in politics in the European Union. Okay, all of those, you can use the Euro prefix in lots and lots of ways. Go start throwing that prefix on random words, and then it will be part of Europe. Okay, yep, it's just from Europe. So this next word would be related, and I think we're going to see a number of these in the next episode, mostly. Yeah. What? Yes! The next word is Eurasian, adjective from 1844. One, of a mixed European, European and Asian origin. So this Eurasian thing, comes from both Europe and Asia, which are right next to each other, and they share a landmass over there, in that region. And so, just anything from Europe and Asia is Eurasian. Number two, of or relating to Europe and Asia. I'm not good with the geopolitics, so I couldn't give you any real good examples. Eurasian is also a noun. Woohoo! Next is Eureka. Number, the first form of Eureka. E-U-R-E-K-A. This is an interjection from 1603. This is used to express triumph on a discovery. It's so specific. Oh, I figured something out. I discovered something. That makes me have euphoria. So I shall say, Eureka! Great Scott, I've done it. I have figured out everything. Okay, This has a number, a lots of words in the etymology. Let's read them to you. This is from the Greek, heureka with an H, which means I have found, which is from heuriskein, which means to find, which is from the exclamation attributed to Archimedes on discovering a method for determining the purity of gold. So, Archimedes, what did he do? He discovered a method for determining the purity of gold. He was like, this is gold, and this is other gold, and I want to know which one's more pure, and how can I figure out the purity? There's a whole bunch of other stuff in there that's making it not pure. I want pure gold. How can I figure out how pure it is? Eureka! I've got it! I found it! I found the answer! I guess that's what he said. So yeah, I mean, it's real clear. The etymology is just from heuriskein, which means to find, and then he turned it into I found. I guess that's the form of I did it. I found the thing is heureka. And then we had to get rid of that H. But there is more at the word heuristic, which I do know that word, but I don't think I could tell you what it means. But it must be something about finding something. Let's go find it. Woohoo! That's another way to say I found it. I'm so excited. I have elation that I found it. What? Yay! The second form of eureka is an adjective from 1948, marked by usually sudden triumphant discovery, as in a eureka moment. What was your eureka moment? Do you have a good eureka moment when you found something, you discovered something, you learned something? What was that other E word? I can't remember what it was, but I'm sure we've all had them. And I can't remember anyone, anything. A triumphant discovery. Well, I don't really do science. Not really. And so I am not in a position, I don't put myself into a position where I could have any eureka moments, at least in terms of discovering something new. But there's a lot of people out there, there's a lot of scientists out there who have these eureka moments. But also, I don't think it necessarily means discovery. It's also just like, just that sudden like, oh, I get it. I had a eureka moment. I figured it out. One of those. Yeah, there was another E word at the beginning of the E's, I think. I just can't think of what it is. I don't know. Woohoo! The next word is the first form of euro. Noun from 1855. The synonym is wallaroo. W-A-L-L-A-R-O-O. A wallaroo. This is from an Australian Aboriginal language of South Australia, and the language is called, let me see if I can say this, Adnyamathanha. Oh, I was close. Adnyamathanha. It's not right. I know it's not right. Adnyamathanha. It's spelled A-D-Y-N. A-M-A-T-H-A-N-H-A. Thanha is at the end. I'm not saying it right. I very much apologize for that. But it is a wallaroo. A wallaroo. And I don't know what that is. But obviously, anything in Australia has the best names. Come on. A wallaroo. I have not. I mean, it looks like a little kangaroo. A wallaroo is a common name for several species of moderately large macropods, intermediate in size between the kangaroos and the wallabies, so they are combining wallaby and kangaroo, and they have a wallaroo. Why don't I know about this? Why is this the first time I'm hearing about a wallaroo? Huh? Yeah, portmanteau of kangaroo and wallaby. Oh, boy. All right, yeah, we gotta put a picture of a euro, and they just call it euro. So wallaroo, what's where? So the Aboriginal word is euro, I guess. Oh, sorry. That was the most important part that I forgot. I got so hung up on how to pronounce the Aboriginal language. Their word is Yuru, Y-U-R-U. So then we, of course, changed it to Euro in English. And but also, because it's a combination of kangaroo and wallaby, we call it a wallaroo. Oh, boy. All right. Next word, woo, 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 woo. The second form of Euro is a noun from 1981. 1981. The common basic monetary unit of most countries of the European Union. I believe I heard there are 27 in the European Union using the Euro. Now, I don't know, does that include Britain or not? Because they left, so it might not include them. And it says to see the money table, of course. You got to go read up on all the monies in the money table when we get there. This is short for the equivalent of Europe or European in the languages of the European Union. We knew that would be like if Canada and Mexico and America combined in North America to make a piece of money called the Americo, maybe. Let's not do that, maybe. I don't know. I don't think that, but there are positives and negatives to that situation. I don't think that it would ever happen, though. Okay. Whoa, 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 what? I am so happy I have euphoria. The last word is Euro with a capital E, adjective from 1963, and the synonym is just European, and Euro is also a noun. So if you're talking about somebody who lives in Europe, they are a European, and then also they're, oh, hey, you're a Euro. You're a Euro. Okay, let's pick a word of the episode. We had euphony, euphorbia, euphoria, euphoriant, euphotic. Did I miss something? Or euphorbia, euphoria, euphoriant, euphotic, euphrosyne, euphuism, euploid, eupnea, Eurasian, Eureka, Eureka, Euro, Euro, Euro. There we go. Let's see. I mean, I like these words that sound very nice together. I like a Eureka moment. We all love those. But euphoria, I mean, that's pretty great too. We want to be in a state of euphoria at all times, but we can't because we need the bad. So we know what the good feels like. It's all balance. Euphoriant, euphotic, euphuism is just the best word to say. So you got to really think about it. Okay. We got to pick one. Let's pick euphoria as the word of the episode. I want to be in euphoria. Euphoria to me is looking at a wallaroo. I'm gonna pet the wallaroo, and it's not gonna punch me because it's too small. I want a wallaroo as a pet. There's one in a pink shirt. That's it for the words. All right, let's bring up the movie list. What has Spencer watched next? Let's see, we did, I think, that. The Twin Peaks pilot. Now, you would think that the pilot of a TV show would not be considered a movie, but it's feature length. It's an hour and a half, and I believe it is often shown as a film, as its own thing, so it totally counts. I think the original name was Northwest Passage. Oh, I mean, I could talk a long time about Twin Peaks, but I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna say, watch this pilot. I think it's about an hour and a half. There's a couple of different versions out there. Watch it. If you've never seen it, watch it. And if it's not enough to hook you, let me rephrase that. It should be enough to hook you. If it hooks you, then you are hooked, and you should watch the rest of the show. Go on to season one, and then season two, and then I'll just say it. Then you go to the movie, the official movie, Fire Walk With Me. It's a prequel, so it's going to spoil a lot of stuff. You got to do it in the right order. And then you got to read the books, and then you got to watch the third season. So what else to say about Twin Peaks? I don't know. It's a good movie. It's a good show, and there's a movie, and there's kind of two movies, and there's just too much to say about it. So I can't say much about it. But it's a whole world, and you just watch the one, and if it fits with you, it fits, and if it's not, it's like, all right, it's not for you. It's not for everybody. But it's very good and fun and weird and silly and goofy and scary. Okay, that's it. That's the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening and watching. I hope this episode gave you euphoria with words that were euphony, and you had a eureka moment at some point. Maybe the Wallaroo gave you, the Euro gave you a eureka moment. This has been Spencer Dispensing Information. Goodbye.